I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me, of course, is my mom, Caroline Kilborn.
Yes, and we're glad to be here today. We have an interesting guest, an old friend of ours. Well, she's not old, but she's I've known her since she was a little girl, so there.
Probably practically since she was a baby.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, our guest today is Abby Marks Beal. She's the founder and CEO of The Corporate Educator. She's a speaker and trainer who creates content-rich programs using accelerated learning and adult learning principles that make it easy for participants to learn. Her topics of specialty include faster reading, email management and etiquette, and time and stress management. And her recent book, which just came out this month, is called...
The Complete Idiot's Guide to Speed Reading.
Welcome, Abby.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Quite a long time. I talk now.
Yeah, right.
I talk when I think we first met as a baby.
I actually met with Abby in San Diego, a couple years ago was that?
About 2 or 3 years ago
We both happened to be in San Diego at the same time, so we were able to connect then. Mm. And, you know, she was telling me a little bit about her writing career, because this is not the first book you've written, is it, Abby?
No, it's not. It's technically the fifth, but really the third. I say that because the first book I wrote was a college-level textbook that's been revised 3 times, and each project I've looked at it as a book project, even though it was the same thing revised. So really it's only 3, but could be 5 if I want to stretch it.
So you started out as writing a college textbook. That was your first book writing project?
Yes, it was.
How did
in
that
the
happen?
Early 1990s.
Yeah, how did you come to write that?
When I saw that question that you wanted to ask me, I said, that's going to be a good one for me to answer, because let's just say I never thought of myself as a writer. I even now not sure that I think of myself as a writer, but I was just a specialist at the time in speed reading, and I thought I would throw out another course to the community college locally on study skills. So it was in the catalog. I hadn't even taught it yet, and I got a call from the publisher, or a publisher, just saying, we see that you're an expert in speed reading. An expert. I hadn't even taught the course yet. But we see you're an expert. We're interested to know if you'd like to write a book. And I almost hung up on her.
Seriously?
I thought she was joking. But before I put the cradle down, I picked the phone back up and I said, are you serious?
Good question.
Yes, I am. I said, well, let's talk. And so that's really how it got started. It was not something I intentionally had planned on doing.
Well, that's interesting, because for so many writers, the story is completely different. You know, finding a publisher is like it's like finding the Holy Grail.
It is, and that is if you want to write. But I never thought at that time that I would want to write.
See, they should go at it backwards then.
I totally come into it, you know, because the market wants me there. It's not because I've wanted to be there.
So you were very unattached.
What do you mean unattached?
Unattached. You weren't attached. Well, it's sort of a concept that's popular around here, like in Buddhism, being unattached to something, that you're more likely to succeed if you're not attached to the results of your actions.
Oh, okay. Then I was very unattached.
Yeah.
I was dating somebody at the time. That's why I said, unattached? What does that have to do with my writing? But I understand what you're saying. No, I was not attached to it at all.
So from there, a college text. And were you a college professor at that time?
No, I was an entrepreneur. It was 1991 when I was approached about writing it, and it didn't get published until 1994. It took that long to negotiate the contract and to get the book together. I really had a lot of research to do, a lot of reading of other people's materials, because really, as much as I had taught study skills in my past, I wasn't really an expert at that time, and I really felt if I was going to write something, I needed to spend the time to become an expert.
Mm.
And I was also getting married at that time and moving from an apartment to a house, and so many other things got in the way that, so I was really just an entrepreneur making, you know, a business teaching speed reading primarily, and finding the time to write this project.
Did you have a specific deadline from the publisher?
They gave me deadlines. I'm not sure how good I was at meeting them. I'm very good now. I'm extraordinary now compared to other authors, I think. But I think back then I did the best that I could. And so, I always reminded them that I was doing the best that I could.
So that first book...
They were patient with me, and I think they're glad because when a book goes to more than one edition, it means they're making money.
Yeah, right.
So they're probably very happy that they were patient with me. So the last edition came out 2 years ago.
And what kind of courses is that book used in?
It's used... I really thought it was going to be used like in a two-year college, like a community college to help tool up some of the student skills. But really what I found over the years... They've done their research, too, is it's really used in high schools.
Oh.
It's used in high schools and some colleges, but the primary buyer are high schools. And so when I rewrote it every time, I've had to kind of tool it more into the high school realm than into the college realm.
Okay.
But it's definitely got both in there.
And
is
it used in a particular curriculum?
I hope so. You know, I don't know many schools that have a study skills curriculum. But there are career schools. A lot of the buyers are somewhere in the Midwest and South. They're not as much up here where I am in the Northeast. I'm up in Connecticut. Not nowhere near as many buyers here as there are in the other parts of the country for some reason.
Interesting. Well, we have a lot of community colleges.
We
have a lot of community colleges in the Midwest, and I think they're getting, they're realizing these kids need these skills before they go to community college, before they go to college. So
you would think.
Yeah, you would think.
I've always felt that everyone, even if you're a good student, because good students sometimes work hard, they work harder sometimes than they need to be a good student, that if they all had strategies, then they would all find the schoolwork to be much more digestible and more satisfying than sufferable. But, you know, it's all budgets. It's about who knows how to do it. And most people aren't taught, study skills. Teachers aren't taught study skills when they go through teacher college, unfortunately. And so when a teacher teaches, they say, do it this way, even though the learner in the classroom really isn't like that teacher, but they have to adapt to that teacher's style.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I like to give people more of like a menu to pick from. There isn't any one best thing, but there are many that work.
So the way that might be best for one person to study and to learn is not what's best for the next person.
Exactly. Right. And by going through in the first book that I wrote, the study skills book, people come to find out what the options are and figure out what works best for them so that they can make learning work for them.
That's interesting.
That's the same with the speed reading book, too. There are 13 different ways to use your hands or a card and two different ways to move your eyes. And, it's not like there's one way to do it.
Now, the speed reading book is geared towards a general audience.
Yes, it is. Exactly. It's really meant for any adult, let's just say. It even could be a high school student, but anyone who's secondary school and older who has a need to manage reading, just be it for school, for work, for pleasure, whatever it is.
Well, you had some techniques in there that I used, but I really should have had a stopwatch because when I was doing the readings, in the appendix, I kept glancing at my watch to see when the minute was up, and that cut down on my time, of course.
I get a little paranoid thinking, am I going to go over the minute?
Yeah, right.
3 minutes
exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah.
But I must say this.
How did you do with it?
Pretty good. I started out with 288.
That's a decent start.
Yeah, and then I got up to 324, so I thought that was pretty good. But I like the short. I like the column ones, and that's what you find in newspapers and magazines instead of the long, left to right. And I liked that.
Well, for someone who hasn't seen the book, familiar, what do you mean by 288, and like how is this book structured?
Okay, this is just great. Well, I'll let Abby explain.
Yeah,
it because it's,
yeah.
I like hearing it from you. what did you get from it? But I'm happy to share. That's fine. The book is structured in such a way that like the first five chapters really give the learner everything they want to know about speed and comprehension. And we did that on purpose because we knew that anybody who comes to an idiot's guide just wants to get the basics. They just want to know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the 10 chapters of the book is structured so that there's other things like taking notes while you read, remembering things that you read, reading on screen, organizing your reading, those kinds of things. So they're more extraneous to speed, but they're all important for getting through material faster. So I think what Carolyn was referring to is a strategy where when you have a newspaper column, instead of moving your eyes word by word or left to right, that you basically go down the center of the column. You like basically take a pencil down the center of the column, make a light line down the center, and then follow that line and see if you can see how much you can see on the left and the right as you go down. And so it really helps to kind of pick up more information at a glance. I think that's the one you were referring to, Carolyn?
Yeah, I am. And it was interesting, too. You had somewhere in here where when you cross out the top of the letters, it's not as easy to read them as if you cross out the, was it the other way around?
Basically, when you read, one way to read faster is to focus your eyes up on that white part between the lines. So when you're reading a line, let's say you're on the second line of text, if you put your eyes in between the bottom of the first line and the top of the second, you're going to see the shapes of the letters that are on the second line that are going to help you kind of breeze through the material faster or make predictions, let's just say, faster, because the tops of letters provide you more with clues to what the letters are,
mm-hmm.
whereas bottoms of words don't give them to you at all. They're all pretty standardized.
Instead of reading word for word, you can go really, really quickly through there.
Let's help you flow is really what it is.
I saw another article about speed reading, and it showed how people only need to read the first and last letters of words, and sometimes the other letters are mixed up, and it doesn't matter. You're still going to get the gist of it. That's weird.
That's true. The problem with that is that most people can't just read the first and last letter of something that they read. But I saw that, too. It's actually a PowerPoint that I use in my workshops because so many people sent that to me. It was research out of Cambridge University,
okay.
I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a great thing to show people is that you can understand something when everything is garbled in between.
I know.
You know, the word, except for the first and last letter, stays the same.
It was very interesting.
It is very interesting.
But that doesn't...
So the power of the mind.
But
really
that doesn't necessarily
great.
Increase your speed because there's no way to apply it. Is that what you're saying?
No. It's really more that it just shows that the brain makes predictions.
Right.
In ways that
okay.
we are unaware.
Right.
That's really what that.
So the thing about reading the tops of the letters, that means like if you're reading one line but you're looking where you're seeing the tops of the letters in the next line, that you're sort of getting prepared to read the next line so it'll be faster?
It's like you never put your eyes on the words themselves.
Wow.
You only put them on the top shapes of the letters. I know this sounds weird on radio. Listening to this. It's the kind of thing you really got to see to understand. But
so,
it's like
right.
it's just being able to see the tops of the letters. It really helps you flow better instead of really trying to process the whole shape of a letter.
Wow. So if you're using a ruler,
mm-hmm.
does that help you do that? Like you move the ruler down the page?
Not sure if that would help as much.
Mm.
Honestly, the ruler actually, if you're going to use a ruler, the best place to put it is on top of the words that you've already read. So that it pushes your eyes down the page.
Okay.
I talk about a method in there called the white card method, which is basically the same thing as putting a ruler on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of putting it underneath the line that you're reading, you put it on top of the line.
Okay.
So that you block out whatever you've already read and leave available to you what's coming up. So it really pushes you and forces you to really keep going.
So you don't go back and reread.
Right. The tendency to go back is less, and sometimes you do have to pick up the ruler or the card because you know you missed something, but chances are it's a lot less
mm-hmm.
when you get good at using the card or the ruler. Or you can use a pen, or you can use a piece of paper, or as long as it covers up what you've already read, you're in good shape.
Now, you have in here little boxes of things, and that we've seen that before in books. Saw that in Karen's book on the one for definitions. Speed secret and a speed tip. And this is helpful because you have to know the lingo. It's like anything you start. You have to know the lingo of what we're talking about, and that's what the definitions are for, correct?
That is, and honestly, I had to conform my material to the Idiot's Guide's formats. If you go to any store and you pick up an Idiot's Guide, especially the ones that have been printed in the past couple of years, they have over 450 titles.
Wow.
It's amazing. You know, so I feel pretty honored that I have the speed reading title. You know?
Right.
But this is their format. This is what they, I hate to use the word force, but they forced me into making sure that I put in definitions and secrets and, you know, speed bumps and those kinds of things on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what makes the appeal of the Idiot's Guide.
Right. Well, they have, I was just looking at the back here, they show some, and you can just get about anything you want.
Yes, that's the whole idea.
And who is the publisher of the series?
Penguin is the publisher, but it actually on the book it says Alpha.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Penguin is the larger umbrella to Alpha.
Right. We had a publicist from Penguin, Tarcher, on our show a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
It does seem to be a really good publishing company.
Yes, indeed.
They do all kinds of different kinds of publications, very, very general public types. Yeah, they're a very good publisher. I'm very pleased to be affiliated with them.
Now, how do they select books for this series?
Someone comes up with a good idea, and they go, gee, that's good. Let's do that one. Honestly, I think, you know, they take some of the major topics mm-hmm. that are out there. I've seen some pretty wacky topics that they've chosen, which I find interesting.
Such as?
Well, it's not wacky, but, I'm trying to remember. All I know is when I went to the editor's office in New York, which normally people don't do, but I happened to be in New York, and I went and visited with her and said hello and thought it was a good thing to shake hands, her whole wall had Idiot's Guides on because that's what she does. And I looked at some of the topics. It's like, you know, Idiot's Guide to Sword Swallowing. I don't know if that was the Idiot's Guide to Buddhist Meditation, the Idiot's Guides to Homeopathy, the Idiot's Guide to, oh my, you name it, it was there. I mean, some things that I thought were just a little out there, and I wonder who the market was.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Or, you know, Idiot's Guide to Bridge, the Idiot's Guide to Chess Playing, the Idiot's Guide to Checkers, the Idiot's Guide to Ping Pong. I mean, they have a whole book on these things. I don't know how they do it.
Why do you think people like to buy books that are calling them idiots?
I know. I'll agree. When this project came up, I really had to think, do I want to write an Idiot's Guide? Because I never disrespect my students ever.
Yeah.
And I just kind of feel like it's being disrespectful. But on the other hand, there's such a well-known publisher with such a well-known series, as is the Dummies series, which
I know.
Not the same. There's a Dummies series and an Idiot's Guide, and never shall the twain meet. They're very separate entities. So did I want to be an idiot or did I want to be a dummy? You know?
I know.
It's like, and the Idiot's Guide is the one that came up. I didn't have a choice about doing the Dummies Guide. But it sells. That's basically it. The bottom line is people just say, I want the basics. Yes, I'm an idiot. I admit it. I'm not real smart about this topic, but I want to know more. And they told me at Penguin when I started to remember that the people who read this book are not idiots. That's what they said. They said these are usually very smart, some college or a lot of college education who are really looking to better themselves,
mm-hmm.
is what they said. And so I said, okay, so I can't really make it too stupid. They said no, and I said good, because I'm not stupid.
So, because when you not everything is speed read. I mean, you point that out, that just because you speed read some things doesn't mean you're going to speed read other things like novels. Or things like that. I mean, you don't want to speed read everything.
There's a choice that you have. And Carolyn, now that you've read the book or part of the book, you kind of understand that, I think you understand that there's different gears that someone can go into, and that most of the time people are stuck in first or second gear because they don't know how to get into third, fourth, or fifth gear. Fifth gear meaning like overdrive and really fast.
Right.
And once you have the ability, you can choose whenever and wherever you want to use the strategies. So if you're reading a novel that you just want to get to all the action and you don't want to waste your time on all of the description and all of the setting stuff, you can speed read through that and slow down on the action part.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're really, if you're reading something that really you can't speed read, like the Bible, or you're speed reading Shakespeare, I mean, it's hard to do that. But you can probably read it in gear two instead of gear one.
Right.
Do you get as...
It's kind of making decisions. Do I really want to enjoy it? Do I need it just for work or school? Or, you know, so two people might read the same thing very differently based on what they want.
Or how much time do I have and how much reading do I have to get done in that time?
That's also a consideration.
Right. Do you get as much content, understanding of the content when you speed read as if you're reading in a slower gear?
I personally get a lot more content when I'm reading faster because I can't daydream as much.
Oh.
You can't. You have to really be on task in order to get it faster.
Yeah.
See, the brain processes about 400 words a minute, and the average reader reads about 200 to 250 words a minute. So that leaves you about 150 to 200 to 200 words that the brain wants to occupy. And so it causes a lot of daydreaming for slower readers because the brain wants more to do. So by reading faster, the brain doesn't have as much time to daydream.
So that's like, that's what happens.
That helps you to concentrate and it helps you to understand.
That's what happens when you realize, I just read that and what did it say? Right?
And that's called speed looking. That's called speed reading.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of a vicious circle for someone who doesn't have good reading skills because they don't have reading as good reading skills, they're not, their brain isn't, you know, they're daydreaming more, which makes them be able to read even less well.
Right, exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of people don't read because they find that that happens.
So 400 words per minute?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's how fast the brain thinks. And hyper people think faster than that.
And can you actually read that quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think I could.
400 is really not that fast. Yeah. A lot of people think that, you know, if they're at 200 or 250, they think, wow, 400. It's really not that fast.
I think I could have gotten up there if I'd, you know, kept with it. But like I say, you've got to have... To get yourself to practice this, you have to have a good way to time yourself.
Mm. Yeah, a stopwatch or even a kitchen timer that can do 1 minute or an egg timer.
Yeah.
That has a minute on it or 3 minutes, up to 3 minutes.
But it's fun. It's fun just to try it, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, and I think your selections that you've put in the book to do this are excellent, some of them really, you know, of interest to me.
I'm so glad you said that because I really had to think long and hard on what material I wanted people to practice on.
Oh, sure.
And I really feel very pleased with what I picked, and I actually had to pay quite a bit of money for some of those to get reprinted in there. But I thought it was worth it to do it because I really want people to not just read faster but also learn something at the same time. And so, like, there are the seven readings that are in the back, and just quickly I'll tell you the topics. One is on homeopathy and homeopathic medicine. One is about American health. One is about bread in France and how it all came to be. It's a very interesting article. Time management article, an article by Bill Gates on creating a paperless office. It's a reprint from one of his books. A master's thesis that I know someone who wrote on tattoos, which I thought was very interesting.
Yes.
And then sleep deficit, why people really need to pay attention to how much sleep they get.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I like all these articles, and I hope you know others do. So, Carolyn, thank you for that comment.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy it. In fact, I had to sit down and read some of them, not speed reading.
Just because you were interested.
Right.
That's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Abby Marks Beal, who's the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Speed Reading. And we were talking about the series, the Complete Idiot's Guide series. Abby, so how did you get selected to do this book?
Well, once again, fate was in my path because I already have another book called 10 Days to Faster Reading that came out in 2001. And so I thought that was it. I was done, you know, writing speed reading books. But a friend of mine, a professional friend, called me and said, you know, Abby, my agent is looking for someone to write a speed reading book. Are you interested? And she told me how much the advance was, and I said, oh, yeah, I'm interested. And so she got me in touch with her agent. I don't have an agent, but I used him in order to get into this project.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets a cut of whatever I'm getting as well, but it worked out well. So that's how it came about. Is she knew that I was involved in speed reading. They needed somebody. She called me, and I said yes. And they liked me, and then there we go. I never looked for another. I did not want to write this book.
Well, how long did this one take you to write?
They gave me a really strict deadline. It was hard because we started talking in July of last year. We didn't have a contract in hand until about the beginning of September, and they wanted it by November.
Wow.
Oh, my.
And so I really busted tail, and I finished it November 4th, and I remember that because I was going on a cruise that day.
Oh,
and I said it had to be done before I went away. It had to be. So I did that. Really
well,
got it done.
You done a good job.
Thank you.
Were you able to use a lot of the material that you had from your earlier book?
I wasn't allowed to look at it. Basically,
you weren't allowed to look at it.
It's copyrighted to me. It's copyrighted to someone else, and I had to get special permission to even write this new book from them. And under the condition that I could not use any material in the same form that I had in that book, so I didn't even open that book the whole time that I wrote this book. It was somewhat challenging, but I really didn't want to, break the copyright. Let's just say
right. Mm-hmm.
Right. There was one exercise I did include in this book that I did go back to them and get permission for, and they were very kind to do that. I was very happy that they did.
Why was the earlier book not copyrighted to you?
That was a mistake I made. I really didn't know what I was getting into. That book, there's another example, I never looked to write because at that time I had, how old was he? He was four. I had three or four-year-old and a six or seven-year-old at that time. I really didn't have time to write a book. But someone found me on the internet. They called and said, do you want to write a book on speed reading? I'm like, oh, my God, how could I turn this down? So that was how that came about, and I just kind of didn't notice that the rights were not mine. I've learned a lot since then.
And usually the author does retain the rights to the book?
It's not always usual, no.
Oh, okay.
Authors really have to be smart enough to ask for them.
Ah, okay.
I think actually I do remember asking for them on the 10 Days book, and they turned me down.
Mm.
And so it was either I did the project, without the copyright, or I didn't do the project. And I said, I think I want to do the project.
But it's still, you're still listed as the author.
I'm still the author.
Okay.
I didn't realize that happened. I thought, the author always had copyright.
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Nope. Interesting.
Now, does that mean if they reprint it that you don't necessarily get any more, or do you still have some royalty arrangement?
Oh, I still get royalties.
Okay.
The copyright basically just means is I can't take that material and use it in any other form without their permission.
Ah.
That's basically the deal.
Wow.
I mean, I can still run workshops, I can use the material, that kind of thing, but I can't reprint it in
right.
similar form at all.
Which I would think that would have been really challenging for this most recent book, because if you're writing about the same subject
mm-hmm.
and it's you,
mm-hmm.
You're going to say the same thing in kind of the same way.
Well, I really tried hard not to, because it was 7 years ago. And I've learned a lot in 7 years, and I've taught, seven more years of classes. And I kind of knew what I could manipulate it into. And the presentation is different as well. It's the way that this book is structured is different than the 10 Days book, and the analogies are different. The photographs we put in there, which were not included in the 10 Days book, the types of reading is very different. The 10 Days book has readings with questions, and this book has no questions at all, where it's self-comprehension.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So these are one-minute timings, and they're called 3-2-1 timings. So I changed the total format on purpose of the way that people would learn the material.
So basically you wrote this book in 2 months.
Yes, two and a half.
two and a half months. And how did you start? I mean, did you had an outline, and how detailed, and
That's where all nonfiction books should start, is with an outline.
Right.
It's really, because without an outline, I don't know how people would do it, honestly. Like right now I'm writing an online course. I'm taking this material and I'm adapting it for online. And how did I start? I had to create an outline.
Right.
And without it, I can't proceed. There's just no way. to do that. So and it manipulates, it changes drastically by the time you're done, but at least you have a place to start.
And how detailed an outline do you do?
As detailed as you can get. What do you want to include in each section? What's a subsection? What comes next? That kind of thing.
So you have that all laid out before you actually start writing?
Yes, I do.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how about like the pullouts, the little boxes and so forth? Have you already decided what those are going to be ahead of time? Or how do you decide what goes in?
Not completely, no. Those kind of came about where when I would come into content that I go, you know what, that's better in a box than it is here. Mm-hmm. I would put it in a box.
Okay.
And they basically said I had to have a box about every 2 pages.
Wow.
of something. And so I was pressured to find boxes, which was at times pretty stressful. And at times I had more boxes than they wanted in the pages that were given. I will also say that the editors that I worked with were phenomenal, really phenomenal, in taking my content and making it into an idiot's guide. Because, I mean, I was a decent writer and people would understand what I wrote, but they really were so good at figuring out what I was saying and how to make it look good. So I didn't write this myself. They were fabulous.
So with the editors, when did they get involved in the process?
Well, after November 4th, I thought they would be involved in it. But they didn't really start doing anything with the manuscript till beginning of January.
Oh, my.
Which surprised me because I really would have liked to have had a little more time, but that's okay. It was done. And they got involved in January, gave me back the manuscript by the end of January with all their changes, and then I had about less than a month to come back to them with anything that I disagreed with or wanted to have changed back.
So you got a manuscript with quite a few changes from the editors?
Oh, yes.
What was your first emotional reaction to that?
Interesting you asked that, because I was not happy.
Oh, I can understand
that. Definitely, well, I was like, what's the matter with this? It was good. but then I got over it. Took about a day. And I looked at it again, and I said, you know what? It's really good. The way they manipulated it was really good. And they must know what they're doing, because they've done this before. And I really felt like, you know, they knew what they were doing.
And of course,
it wasn't good at first, but I got over it.
And it had to fit their format of the Idiots series,
right,
which they have
right,
so
exactly.
many.
Right, exactly. It's not a self-published book. I can't just put it out the way I want to.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know.
Were there some things, though, that you did go back and say, no, I think it's better the way it was?
Or? Oh, yeah. Oh, I definitely stuck up for myself where I felt that they were wrong. Or where they were not as correct as they could have been, because they don't know the content like I do.
Right.
And I would say, look, that doesn't flow right there, or they really need to know this before this. And they were very good about whatever I wanted. It was fine.
Oh, that's good. So then when you got, so you sent back your changes, and then was there a whole nother round of revisions?
I wish there was, but there wasn't, because now that I'm reading through the book, I found a few typos. Mm. That's kind of normal, I guess, for a book. And so far, nothing serious. But I'd just like to have a book that was perfect if there was a way.
Wouldn't it
but
be nice?
Get it back, so we'll
yeah, it's interesting what an elusive goal perfection can be.
I mean, I don't mind one or two typos, but when or if it affects a learner learning something that's being written, then it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's my opinion.
Right. Well, you have, like in here, one in part two said, when multitasking doesn't work, you know, in today's world, everyone thinks they have to multitask.
Right.
That you just can't do one thing at a time. And so this whole thing was interesting. Then you have reading habit self-evaluation. I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. What are my reading habits and so forth? And I resist the temptation to pick up the phone while reading. I don't do that, but...
You don't pick up the phone, or you don't resist the temptation?
I don't pick up the phone while I'm reading. I like to sit down and read and get in and have a good light. And, of course, at my age, I need a good light. And not be too hot, not be too cold, and just, you know, really have a good time with it. That's what I like to do. So.
There's an interconnection between speed and comprehension and reading habits.
Mm-hmm. I can
and
see that.
So the statistical change that you see in the book with your reading speed has to be meshed with what are your reading habits.
Right.
Right.
And when you're speed reading too, and reading for content, you need to not necessarily sit in a relaxed chair, but sit at a table perhaps, and, you know, more alert. Is that true?
That is very true. It's very funny when I do workshops, and, you know, one of the complaints that these people have, and most of the workshops I do are with business people, and they say, you know, I get so tired when I read, you know. I don't know why. I don't get a lot of reading done at night. And I said, okay.
Are you reading in bed?
In bed? They go, yeah, how'd you know? let's think about this. If you're reading in bed, it's been a long day, and you bring your material to bed, is it a wonder that you get tired and you don't get a lot done? I tell people, reading in bed is great if you want to use it as a nightcap. But it's really not meant for business reading or study material. It's really meant for just something you can enjoy until you fall asleep.
Yeah, right. Just for pleasure.
Just for pleasure, right. And if you have other things you need to learn or to use again, it's better to be in a place that the body knows to learn, like at a desk or a table.
Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to jot things down, too. I mean, if you're
to be able to take notes or a highlight or however you choose to do it.
Yeah.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today, Abby Marks Beal, the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Speed Reading, and the daughter of my father's college roommate.
Right.
And we're really delighted to have Abby with us today. And I believe you were going to read a selection from the book for our audience.
I picked a few of them, and it's interesting that Caroline had picked the one on about the multitasking, because I actually had that marked.
Oh,
good.
Good
for
how about
me.
If I read that one?
Okay.
So how much of it do you want me to read through? I didn't quite understand how long.
How long is that section?
Yeah, there's
about
this.
2.5 paragraphs.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Well, yeah,
that's fine.
Good.
Okay, when multitasking doesn't work, do you feel you have good concentration while you read? If you do, great. If you don't, you're not alone. In his book, Crazy Busy, Edward Hallowell, MD, talks about strategies for coping in a world gone ADD. It seems that since the mid-1990s, people have become compulsive multitaskers, or even triple or quadruple taskers, because of a desire or need to keep up with and respond to the many things that come to us every day. Phone calls, the emails, our colleagues, the media, and so on. According to Hallowell, if none of what you're doing requires your full attention, it's fine to multitask, even though you may make mistakes, miss important points, be impolite, or fail to produce your best work. Multitasking might be fine for some activities, but not for reading. Reading, either speed reading or regular reading, is a mono-focus activity. You need full concentration to look at words and understand them. You need full concentration if you want to use any speed reading strategies and if you hope for solid comprehension or retention. The good news is that when performed in the right mental and physical environments, speed reading strategies encourage monofocusing and force you to concentrate on what you're reading.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, now read a little bit of that list from the reading habit self-evaluation, because that was really enlightening to me.
You want me to read the statements, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Let's see, under reading and time, it's basically broken up into three different sections, reading and time management, reading awareness, and reading strategy. So I'll read a few from each.
Okay.
Under reading and time management, I'm good at finding time for reading, and usually you'd answer yes, sometimes no, or never. I resist the temptation to check my voicemail while reading or check my email the moment it arrives. That's a big one for people reading at work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I always carry reading material with me. I listen to audio tapes or CDs for personal or professional development. I probably should put in their MP3s and iPods, whatever now. And when I'm interrupted by my mental to-do list, I write it down and return to reading. Under reading awareness, things like, I understand the relationship between background knowledge and reading comprehension. I don't read while the television is on.
Mm-hmm.
I read in a quiet, distraction-free environment. I have good lighting where I read. I'm generally relaxed when I have a lot of reading to do. Or I enjoy reading. That's another one. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one. I enjoy reading because some people say, I really don't, but I have to do it. And the idea is that if you do enjoy it, then you're going to do it more. It's really the key.
Right.
Yeah, it would be great if more people did. And then under reading strategies, things like I use my hands, a pen, or a white card to help me read faster, or I can find the writer's outline in most nonfiction reading material. Those are just a few that are in there. But, you know, it's good for people to start knowing where are they right now and then maybe come back to it again and do it later, see if things have changed.
So, Abby, do you write entirely on computer or do you do anything by longhand?
I really do everything on computer. I'm thinking of the transition, the first book in 1994. I wrote that book on an Apple screen that was probably like 6 to 8 inches wide.
Mm-hmm.
So small in comparison to what you can write on now.
Yeah.
And I thought that was amazing to have a computer because, you know,
you could change things.
It really changed things. I don't think I'd write a book if I had to do it on a typewriter. I can tell you that right now. But to have a word processing system was amazing. But everything in the editing process, that's probably also why it took 3 years, is I would send in a chapter, I would have an editor handwrite their changes, give it to me, and then I would make the changes on screen.
Wow.
It was really time-consuming. So it was mailed, snail mailed.
Right,
right. Back. And then I would make the changes. I would print them out, send them back to him. You know, it really was a very different process, where now it's immediate. Immediate. I make a change, I send it, you're on the phone with them, they open it up, oh, yeah, that looks good.
Wow.
It's a huge difference in time.
Immediate feedback is rewarding, too. It's
very.
You know, yeah.
You can get further in your project faster.
Keeps you motivated.
Now, speaking of feedback, did you have any preliminary editors, family, friends, colleagues that you would show the writing to before it went off to the editors?
Actually, the person I did is my, I'll call her a co-author, but she wrote the book with me in that I wrote the book, she checked everything, and she did contribute a whole chapter. Her name is Pam Mullen. And Pam is an associate professor of reading at Onondaga Community College in upstate New York. And she's also a colleague of mine and an on-screen speed reading specialist. And she and I worked together for over 10 years. We just really get along very well, both personally and professionally. And so I wanted to include her in the project. So she was the one who saw everything before it went off. And if there was any problem or any, issue that she felt that needed to be addressed, she would just question me on it and say, well, I'm not sure this is clear, or we should add this here. And so her feedback was very important.
Well, it's good.
But we didn't really have time. Even
I'll
then, that
say.
Took longer than they wanted in that short time frame.
It's good to have that feedback, though, and have, you know, bounce an idea off somebody or something. That's, and as someone as knowledgeable as she was.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that was good.
A lot of times I work in a vacuum here, and I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I get into trouble that way.
Yeah. So how old are your children now?
10 and 13.
Okay, and do they speed read?
I haven't really taught them how to speed read, but what I have done is made a very good model for reading in the house. Like, my oldest son really started reading the newspaper. Believe it or not, he's very into sports. And when he was like 3 or 4, he'd always see his father reading the paper, and he'd show him the sports scores because he would start to identify numbers. And so we got him into identifying numbers, and he would start reading the team names in the paper, and then he'd start to read the whole sports section as he learned how to read when he was 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so now both of my kids love to grab the paper. One reads the sports section, one reads the comics. We take them to the library fairly often. They're good readers because they know that we read, and we value it a lot. But I really haven't approached them yet. My 13-year-old is getting close, where I'm almost ready to show him a few things. Yet his reading demands haven't been that much yet.
Well, in our culture, unfortunately, there's so much distraction with TV and video games and these things. Of course, I realize that with video games, there's some reading involved. But, you know, I remember when I was teaching school, and computers were just kind of coming into their own at that time, and I would I taught quite a few remedial classes, and I would say, you know, you really need to learn to read to get ahead in today's world. And I said, well, this kids would say, well, I'm going to use a computer. I'd say, you got to read the computer, you know, if the computer prints it out on the screen, you have to be able to read it. They didn't
quite
get that.
Well, I think there is some on screen, but it's not the same as continuous reading in a book or a magazine or a newspaper.
Right.
I think more people should be reading more of that. But that's
I agree.
Yet.
Well, you know, reading can go anywhere. can take you anywhere. And that's the thing that I really feel sad for people who don't realize this, that, you know, you sit down and pick up a book and you're there. And you just need to thank the person that taught you how to read.
I just can't imagine. I was talking to somebody who has an employee who basically just admitted that he can't read or write. I thought to myself, and he's 38. And I know there are a lot of people in the world who are like this, and I really don't know how you can really function in this world without basic level reading and writing.
I don't see how. I mean, how could you get around?
They do. There are people who are in their 70s who, you know, finally admit that they can't read or write and then go to literacy volunteers and learn how to read, and it's like they wish they had done it years before, but they were ashamed or afraid.
I'm thinking,
if anybody's listening to this who doesn't know how to read, go learn how to read. It's so cool. It really is.
It is. Absolutely.
Abby, have you always been an avid reader?
Actually, no. I used to hate to read.
Oh.
I used to hate to read when I grew up. I did come from a very literate household, as you know, but I just never found a lot of pleasure in reading. You know, once I got into middle school and high school and all those nice books that they had you read in elementary school kind of disappeared, and you had all those nasty textbooks that you had to read. And they never showed you how, so you just had to, you know, read the book, answer the questions, and it really was kind of boring. I really never liked it, and I really didn't get much satisfaction or value from it. And it wasn't until after I graduated college that I learned these skills from a job that I took, and it was like, wow, the light bulb went off in my head, thinking, how come they don't teach this in school? This would have been so great for me. I think college would have been a whole lot easier, and I would have seen a lot less people spending all-nighters reading because they would have had much better skills.
Right.
So how did you become an entrepreneur teaching reading skills? How did that transition happen? Do you have an educational background in this at all?
I have a bachelor's degree in Spanish, which has nothing to do with this, except I went through college, 4 years of college. I now have a master's in adult learning that I did in 1995 is when I got the degree in that. And pretty much a lot of what I have learned has been self-taught, because there are no schools that teach speed reading as a major.
No, I guess not.
Even developmental reading as a major really is not the same as these strategies are. And so it's really things that you learn from other people's writings and taking classes and learning how people learn.
And that's important, because not everybody learns the same rate, the same way. The same speed, that's
and how to teach it in a way that most people will find it interesting. There isn't any one best way to teach.
Right.
But there are better ways than others. And so I think I've come up with some better ways than others. People really like my courses. I incorporate accelerated learning and experiential learning when I teach them live. People find that to be a lot of fun. Learning should be fun.
If someone wants to learn more about some of your courses and so forth, they can look at your website.
Actually, this online course I hope will be ready by end of August, beginning of September. And that's great, because I can go places that normally I can't to teach this.
And your website is?
It's www.revitupreading.com. Revitupreading.com.
Great.
Is that one word then, Revitupreading?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I noticed on your website that you have some e-books that you've published as well. And how are those different than the books that you've written for regular publication?
Well, there's two different kinds that I have. One is just informational, just kind of my thought process. It's a 14-page ebook, nothing big. It's called Slaying the Email Dragon. That's just kind of my top 10 things that I think people need to be aware of in order to manage their email. So that's just like something that I thought I would just put out there. 14 pages is no big deal, you know, easy to sell. And easy for people to digest. The other ebook is the ebook version of the 10 Days to Faster Reading book, of which I own the rights to, that I got the rights for.
Ah.
And that's 122 pages.
Oh, cool.
So that's a very different animal, but they're both basically Adobe PDF documents.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're called, quote unquote, ebooks.
Okay. And
electronic books.
Right. Now, have you done any or thought about doing any publications with print on demand?
I've thought about it. Haven't gotten there yet, though.
Yeah. But then you also have various courses available on your website?
We have, we have more product right now than we do courses. I used to teach this Revit Up reading course live for the past 2 years, mostly in the Northeast area, mm-hmm. for the public. But those courses were very expensive to market, and so that's when I decided to go into the online version. It's just so much easier for me, and also probably for the learner, just to do it whenever they want. But I do corporate training, and I do association workshops all the time. That's pretty much how I make my living.
Okay.
So those are the kinds of things that I can do. So in terms of someone coming to me and wanting information, they really right now have to pretty much get it from a book. I do have software, Revit Up Reading software. It's a real quickie lesson in how to get up to speed with what you read. And it's inexpensive and very powerful.
Now,
but that's the most they can get right now.
You say that you don't really consider you never wanted to be a writer and don't really consider yourself a writer, but with all your presentations, you have to write them as well, I assume.
I write outlines for those. I don't write word for word.
Okay.
Presentations. This online course right now is reminding me of the writing process, and it's really frustrating because it's summertime and I want to be relaxed and have fun, and I can't because I'm on deadline with this project.
Oh.
So there's an old saying. My saying is, anyway, I love to have written.
I like that.
Yes.
My favorite. I don't like to write, but I love to have written.
Yes. Of course,
I keep thinking of that as I'm sitting here plodding along, you know, one page after the other. It's like, okay, this will look good when it's done. It'll be good.
Of course, nowadays with laptops, you can go outside and watch your kids at the pool and be writing.
I haven't been able to mentally do that yet.
That's a multitask.
We have a beautiful backyard, and my office looks over our swimming pool, and I just haven't been able to translate that. I want to enjoy myself when I'm outside.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Work is in my office, and fun is outside. So.
Okay, have you ever had any desire to write a fiction piece?
I did at one time, but I honestly am not sure I'm cut out for that. I'm really good at nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay to be really good at nonfiction and to not write fiction. I don't know if there are that many authors that are really successful in both mediums. Maybe there are, but I haven't seen too many of them.
Well, do you feel that writing nonfiction allows you to express your creativity?
My creativity. I don't know if it's creative. Maybe it is.
I'd say it is.
Right, if you think so.
Well, you know,
creativity is like art. You know, but that's probably the way I think.
No, I think
maybe it is for me. It is creative design. Let's put it that way. Educational design.
Because
it allows
you know,
me to do that, and I really enjoy doing educational design.
You took this topic, which to some people, myself included, seemed to be something I would not probably try or you know need to do, but it was fun, and so this is good. This is what you know. People need to try new things, and this is something they can do.
That's great. Well, I'm glad you tried it. And continue if you so desire. Keep going. There's more in the book, the other exercises, if you haven't gotten to all of them.
Yeah, right. I just need to get a better timer.
Because I'm going to give you a suggestion, too. It's,
okay.
A very cool free application on the Internet that I found recently. It's called Zap Reader, ZAPREADER .com. And all you do is you open it up, and it will say immediately the screen, I think, says, paste your text here. So all you have to do is find some text on your screen or go to a website and get some text and paste it in there. And then you can set it up to feed you word for word or every 2 words, every 3 words, or 3 words at a time, excuse me, at a speed that you want. And so it force feeds the text that you've loaded into the screen. And it's very good at getting the eyes and the brain to start making predictions about what you see.
Oh,
very
interesting.
Fun. Very fun, yeah. And I recommend anybody to try it.
That was zapreader.com?
Mm-hmm. ZAPREADER.
Very cool.
It is very cool.
Of course, now, you see when you have bifocals,
yeah.
it's a little difficult to read a computer screen sometimes. So I have to have music classes when I play piano, and that's
okay.
They're all near point. So I use those when I'm doing anything computer, too, because then I don't have to move my head back and forth because that's hard.
If that works, that's a good solution.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So we're about out of time. I just have one last question because we usually like to ask our authors about promotion, you know, what they do to promote their book and so forth. And since this is part of this extensive series, do you have to actually do anything for promotion or is it all handled for you?
Well, this, I'm not a famous author. I wish I was. So there's a lot that I'm choosing to do for this one. Being the third major book that I'm putting out, I've learned that the best time to get information out to anybody is in the first 6 months. And so the book just came out June 3rd. It's up for sale June 3rd. And I have, the Penguin has their own PR people. I have my own marketing consultant. I have someone else helping me write press releases. And we're coordinating all of this together to come out at the same time. And so I'm really pushing the envelope with what they can do and letting them know that I'm helping them.
Great.
Because of the people I've hired, as well as my creative idea for sending the book to the media.
Great.
Well, so I'm really working on trying to get everything done. They haven't sent the book out yet, so we'll see what happens in the next few weeks.
Actually, you're famous to us.
Thank you.
And where is your book available?
It's available on any online bookseller, Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I have it on my website as well. It doesn't matter where anybody wants to get it, they can get
and
it.
And, of course, you can order it from one of our local bookstores.
Yeah, we have excellent bookstores.
Yeah, we have really wonderful independent bookstores still here in our small little town.
Fabulous. So if you just tell them, you know, The Idiot's Guide to Speed Reading, Complete Idiot's Guide to Speed Reading, they'll find it.
That's great. Well, thank you for being with us. And
it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Good, and talk to you soon.
I hope so.
Okay.
Take care, Carolyn, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And that wraps us up for today on Writer's Voices.
Stay tuned.
Goes
fast,
I know. It? Stay tuned for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore coming up next if you're listening on Friday, or The Colt Show if you're listening on Monday. And we will close with a quote from Mom.
Keep in mind that neither success nor failure are final.
See you next week on Writer's Voices.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.